Welcome to Dubs OT, your weekly Warriors podcast on thesportsvirus.com.
Brought to you by TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, home of the 2020 PGA Championship. And Kane's Tire in San Rafael, the lowest prices in Marin for over 60 years. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Whitson and Joe Castellano.
Coming up, we'll talk about the Warriors' big upset win over the Rockets on Christmas Day. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. TPC Harding Park in San Francisco is the home of the 2020 PGA Championship, and you will not want to miss this event. It's right around the corner now. Daily and weekly ticket options are available from opening day, that's May the 11th, to Championship Sunday, May the 17th, 2020, for the PGA Championship at San Francisco's very own TPC Harding Park. So check out a major in San Francisco. Go to the website, attend.thepga.com/tickets to purchase your tickets today. Merry Christmas, Ray, and Merry Christmas to everybody out there listening, and certainly a Merry Christmas for the Golden State Warriors pulling out a win against the heavily favored Houston Rockets, and three wins in a row now for the Warriors. They might be ruining their chances of getting the number one pick. Well, no, maybe not. But at the same time, and man, this has been entertaining lately, especially the Christmas Day game, and the fans had a lot to cheer about, and there have been so many games, Ray, this year where the Warriors down the stretch were not able to pull out games. They've been in so many games. This one, they pull it out in the end.
Yeah, it was a game that they wanted to win more than, I think, any game this year. I mean, you knew that certain guys like Draymond were going to show up for this national game because they're not getting much national coverage. They've kind of dropped off the radar for obvious reasons this year. So when they got that spotlight, you knew this was one game they wanted to win against one of their arch rivals. And, you know, I think the Rockets came in playing like they knew who they were playing. They looked at the standings and they said, yeah, these guys, once we go on a little run, and they did in the second quarter, they probably eased off the pedal a little bit. But on top of that, I think the Warriors had a real good game plan. But you know what? As good as the game plan was, the Rockets just missed a lot of open shots. And where have we seen that before? I seem to recall a Game 7 a couple of years ago that was like that. But they had a great game plan for James Harden. Draymond Green mentioned a post-game, did a lot of credit to Jaren Collins, the assistant coach. It's basically a variation of a box and one, where you have one defender shadowing Harden and everybody else playing zone, and they tried to trap him as much as they could to keep him away from the basket, get the ball out of his hands. And the thing about Harden is, and you see this a lot of times when he gives up the ball, he's not getting himself in a position to get the ball back. You know, it's like the anti-Steph Curry. When Curry gets rid of the ball, you know, he's going to run you ragged getting to an open spot so he can get the return pass and maybe shoot a three. Harden sometimes, he checks out of play. Now, I think what happened here was that the Warriors were betting that other guys couldn't beat him like Harden could. You know, I think they've been watching the tape of all these games where he's putting up monster numbers and saying to themselves, well, we got to try something different. So they did, and I guess it was also a variation of what the Kings tried against Harden as well, and it's worth a shot, and it worked out. They basically dared Russell Westbrook to beat him, and I'm going to take my chances with Russell Westbrook shooting open shots versus James Harden trying to break people down off the dribble or trying to get to the free throw line. And by the way, that was the most remarkable statistic of the game, that James Harden got one free throw for the whole game.
Yeah,
that was a unicorn
late in the game. Yeah, that is the most amazing statistic. Like you said, lots of missed three-pointers. I mean, I think Coach D'Antoni exaggerated it by saying something like they'd missed 25 or whatever. I mean, I counted maybe, you know, 10 or a dozen that looked like they were pretty wide open threes.
Yeah.
And they didn't knock them down. And Russell Westbrook, like you said, I mean, he's just not a good three-point shooter, and that was on display. He was 0-for-8 from three. And Harden, like you said, when he gives it up, it's kind of the end of the play where they're not going to get back to him. And one thing I noticed, Ray, is that it looked to me like several times during the game, Rockets players were bickering with each other. And, you know, you hate to see that. I mean, that's not something you want to see in a winning team, that they're not getting along with each other. And it kind of seemed that way.
Oh, I love to see it. especially when it's the Houston Rockets, who in some ways are an odious franchise. But I think in this case, yeah, I think frustration was kind of boiling over. And, you know, there were some times, there were some possessions where they were moving the ball around, but other possessions where it was just stagnant. And it was just hard, you know, a lot of it is Harden one-on-one, and he's pretty effective when he's playing somebody playing straight-up defense against him, or it's Russell Westbrook, you know, taking his shot. But it didn't seem like the ball movement was there for the Rockets. That might have been part of the frustration. But I think mainly is just, you know, they were missing shots. And, you know, as Steve Kerr said, when they're not making buckets, when they're not getting to the free throw line, you're playing less of a half-court game coming the other way. Instead, you're getting rebounds or you're getting steals, and you're able to play a little more up-tempo, which I think for this team, for this assortment of players, you've got to do to be effective at all. You get in the half-court game, it's going to be rough because they don't have a lot of bona fide scorers who can break people down one-on-one outside of D'Angelo Russell. So I think, you know, the missed shots and definitely worked to the flow of the game for the Warriors. And I think it just the frustration just built up for the Rockets. It was one of those games where I think they thought they were going to come in and, like I said, get a stretch in the second quarter where they were extending the lead to double digits. And I think everybody in the building was thinking, oh, boy, this game could get out of hand right here. Maybe the Rockets subconsciously were thinking that as well. But the Warriors came back. And you know, it's one of those cases where the longer the game stayed close, the better chance you thought that the Warriors had to win it, even though they've had trouble closing games because, you know, a little bit of panic sets in. And, you know, the Rockets didn't have any answers down the stretch. The Warriors got some big shots from Draymond, from Glenn Robinson, who I think was a big part of the defensive effort against Harden. And, yeah, all of a sudden they got a winning streak.
Yeah, and it was a 20-5 run to close it out for the Warriors. And I was reading where it was the NBA's biggest Christmas Day upset in 30 years. And this happens, I think, Ray. I mean, of course, the players, the desire that they have. But I just think it's really great coaching that the Warriors coaching staff led by Steve Kerr, these players are improving before our eyes. I mean, a guy like Damian Lee, you know, this is sort of a coming out party for him to score 22. And the way he was just involved in everything, getting a bunch of rebounds. He had, what, 15 rebounds?
Yeah.
That guy's really been coached up well, and it's a shame that he's on this 45-day contract, which is going to end in mid-January. It's the two-way contract. I mean, you just hate to see that because, you know, you feel like the time is ticking on him.
Yeah, and this is a guy who's a perfect example of who could benefit from a year like this. He's getting his playing time, this exposure, and is showing that improvement. And, you know, he's a guy you'd like to keep around, I think. He's had some big games for them this year. And, you know, he's a guy who can provide some scoring punch off the bench. And that was definitely his best game in the NBA on Christmas Day. So it'd be nice to be able to find a way to keep him around. But, you know, I think for a lot of these guys, now we're getting to the middle of the season, and the clock is ticking for a bunch of these guys. You know, what's their future going to be? Is they going to have a future in the NBA? Are they going to have a future with the Warriors? And this is the time to show up. And so I think a lot of guys are taking that to heart. This is kind of a crossroads of their career, and they're playing like it. And this is what I was saying at the start of the year. I mean, we can joke about the tanking, but there are a lot of guys fighting for jobs and fighting for a spot in this league. And if they, you know, those kinds of guys are going to listen. They're going to be coachable. And I think Kerr and his staff have done a real good job this year. I mean, they're still going to have a deficit of talent, and they're just going to be a lot of games they're not going to win. But, you know, they are showing improvement, especially on the defensive end, where they're horrible at the start of the year. And, you know, the effort level is there. So that's all you can hope for from this bunch right now. Be more competitive, play more interesting games, and, you know, grab a win here and there. As far as the draft position, you know, screw the draft position. I don't want to worry about that right now. What I want to worry about is, you know, the guys you're going to move forward with, make them better players with all the experience they're getting this year, and that's going to benefit you next year when you very well could have a serious championship run.
You know whose stock went up on this Christmas Day game, I think, as far as a coach, was Jaren Collins. You mentioned him. and the game plan that he put together for Harden. And he had Draymond Green saying that it was a bleeping phenomenal game plan. Anytime you hear that from a player, you know, calling out the coach and saying how great he is, I think it's going to get some national notice. I mean, this just one game, but all these guys, because they're all just playing better.
Well, talked to Jaren from time to time over the last few years, radio interviews and things like that. And he's a very thoughtful guy and very bright and one of those people who just needed some time and some exposure, and he's starting to get that now. And it's been an excellent experience for him this year. But when a player talks up an assistant coach like that, they get on the radar for a lot of people around the league. So as far as his career, a big moment for Jaren Collins as a coach yesterday, without a doubt. And, you know, we'll see how the metrics improve over the year because their defensive rating has been so bad. But, you know, you just work with what you've got. And they are playing better on the defensive end. You know, not great, but better. And I look at a guy like Glenn Robinson, you know, who's bounced around the league and was never known as a particularly good defender. And he's taken on some challenges this year, and he's done a better job. And yesterday was one of those examples. Another one's D'Angelo Russell, who never had a reputation as a good defensive player. But I think his value goes up as he shows he can play at both ends of the floor. And, you know, this is a year for coaching, for sure. They've got to coach these guys up, and you're starting to see some results.
We'll have more Dubs OT after this from Kane's Tire in San Rafael.
When it's time for new tires, you want the lowest prices and the best service, don't you? Well, Kane's Tire in San Rafael has you covered on both. Kane's has the lowest prices in Marin County, and they provide the warm and welcoming service that you can only receive from a family-run business. And this is a dependable family business that's been around for 61 years. Voted best of Marin for 35 years in a row, Kane's prices beat Costco's prices every time. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street in San Rafael. Give him a call at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942 for Kane's Tire.
One guy who wasn't on the floor very much on Christmas Day was Pascal, and he's the guy that we're really excited about, but he's been banged up, and now he's got a right hip contusion. They don't think it is serious, so definitely won't want him to miss much time here. But he's a big part of the puzzle here going forward. So, you know, lately we just haven't seen the same guy, and that's why. I mean, he's definitely been banged up, and then he has another issue here.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's been kind of a pinball out there, and he's that's going to be part of his game plan is to be physical and try to get to the free throw line. But as a somewhat undersized player at his position, even as strong as he is, there's going to be some dents and dings. And anytime you talk about a hip, you've got to be real careful. Because, again, this is a guy who's going to be a factor going into next season when they're bound to have a better team. So you've got to take the long view with all these players, but especially a younger player who's not used to playing this long of a season. And, you know, right now we're at about the college level of total games for a season. But it's a little bit more of a grind in the NBA schedule. You're playing more games in a week than you are in college. So you got to be careful with, you know, even a guy who's played 4 years in college that, you know, if he's shown enough already, I think that, you know, he can be a factor on this team and in the NBA for years to come. Just be careful with him and take the long view.
All right, we're at the end of 2019 and the end of the decade. And, Ray, you came up with a great idea that you started on social media about taking some nominations for the top 10 Warriors moments of the decade. And I really like reading some of these. You know, for me, it kind of starts with actually a game that has nothing to do with a championship run, but a game that I attended in New York at Madison Square Garden back in 2013, where I was just really lucky to get a ticket. I ended up behind the basket, and I witnessed Steph Curry scoring 54 points at the Garden in a loss, unfortunately, but still, I was wowed by Steph Curry and the array of shots that he had. And, you know, we knew that he was great at that point, but I don't know. That was one of those that just stood out to me, and there's so many great moments in the last decade.
Well, that was a spectacular game, and that's one of those where Curry gets on the map for a lot of people. And the Warriors are a fun, interesting team all of a sudden. After being bottom feeders for so many years, here was a guy, you know, a little guy in the NBA playing under the rim who's kind of willing this team to another level. You know, not up to the championship level yet, but an interesting and fun team to watch. And so that's, you know, it's step by step through the decade, you know, to the point to where by the middle of the decade they're kind of ruling the roost in the NBA. And I don't think anybody saw that happening with this bunch, but, you know, the five-year run in the middle of the decade, to last June, just remarkable basketball, remarkable drama. I'm going to start off with a pretty good one. Chris Cohan sold the team.
That was huge. Yeah.
That was the genesis of all this. And at the time, we didn't know it. I think a lot of people were jaded about the Warriors. Oh, who's this guy? Oh, he likes to be out in front of the camera. Oh, watch out for that. But, you know, Joe Lacob comes in and very aggressive. And he, after a while, even though he got booed that one time when they were honoring Chris Mullin, I think that had to do with the Monte Ellis trade as much as anything. And at the time, I was a little shocked by the trade. Like, what are they doing here? But I think that, you know, everybody was talking about how with Steph and Monte in the backcourt defensively, they were going to be a real problem. And Monte wanted to be the man. Monte thought it was his team. Well, it turned out that the wisdom of that played out over time as they drafted Klay Thompson. They got a bigger guard to go alongside him, a guy who could play some defense and also be an offensive threat, too. But it all started with Chris Cohan selling the team. None of this happens, I don't believe, without Chris Cohan stepping by to the wayside. And, you know, you have to talk about owners in professional sports because it really does start at the top. And then you have somebody like Lacob coming in and hiring somebody like Bob Myers, and people are like, okay, guy used to be an agent, he knows the game, but how's it going to be as far as front office position? But you end up talking to the guy and you realize, hey, these people are pretty smart. They've got a pretty good idea of what they're doing. And step by step, it went from there. You know, acquiring Andre Iguodala was a big moment. They became a playoff team at that point, and they won a playoff series, although they nearly, I was there that night. You talk about a massive case of sphincteritis at the Coliseum at Oracle Arena. It was that night that they almost kicked one away to the Denver Nuggets, but they hold on to win that playoff series. Another big moment was involving Iguodala, the decision to start him game four of the 2015 NBA Finals, that they fell behind 2-1. When Timothy Mozgov went off against them in Cleveland at the
Chiefs. Oh, yeah. He was unstoppable. Yeah.
Yeah. That sentence hasn't been uttered very often. Mozgov was unstoppable, but it happened. And so they had to come up with a new plan. And actually, I remember this during the postgame show on the Warriors flagship radio station. Somebody was asking, hey, do you think they start Iguodala? And I said, I wasn't sure about that. I don't know how much they want to change horses in midstream, you know, but I would imagine that Iguodala is going to get a lot more time on the court. And so what happened is they did start him, and the rest was history. They come back and they take that series in six games. And then you go to the 4th of July of 2016. And, you know, maybe this doesn't happen if the Warriors pulled out that NBA Finals in 2016 against the Cavaliers. But they went out and they got Kevin Durant on the 4th of July, and I got called into the radio station in the middle of a barbecue to take people's phone calls about the Hamptons Five and Kevin Durant coming and that tremendous three-year run of basketball. And, you know, Kevin Durant is his own guy, but I still think as time goes on, fans will look back very fondly on that period when, you know, they had Durant along with Draymond and Steph and Klay on this team. Here's one, Joe, that also doesn't have really anything to do with the championship. It was a year before when they were a playoff team, but remember when they were down 27 to the Raptors in the third quarter?
Oh,
they
yeah.
They came back and they won that game. and big minutes from Jermaine O'Neal in that game.
Of all people.
That's like two generations ago, basketball-wise. December of 2013, I was there that night, and that was crazy. Klay going off for 37 and a quarter.
Oh, yeah, you called it nuclear, yeah.
he went nuclear. And I remember there were nights where Klay was having some problems shooting, and he'd take it to heart. I mean, as much as people look at him as sort of a happy-go-lucky, go-with-the-flow guy, he's pretty serious about this. You don't get it to the level that he has without doing the work and being a tremendously conditioned athlete. And I saw nights where, after the game, he would take half hour, 45 minutes of shooting practice in the arena after everybody had left. He'd have an assistant coach go out there and just feed him the basketball and take shot after shot after shot. So when I was saying that night, that you know, this is something that's going to serve him well down the road. You don't see a lot of guys do this, and the fact that he was that serious about it shows you that his will to be a great player. And I kind of got wind of the fact that Clay didn't really want people to know that he was doing that. That, you know, maybe it was kind of embarrassing, but I looked at it another way. I looked at it like, no, people are going to look very positively upon you. The fact that you do this, the fact that you take it to heart. And, well, look at the results. And it kind of culminated in that third quarter against the Sacramento Kings, where everybody in the arena knew he was going to get the ball, and he couldn't be stopped anyway. And he was making corner threes off the right hip. You know, I mean, it was just one of the most incredible individual athletic performances I've seen in person, I should say. You know, I put it up there with, like, Pablo Sandoval hitting three home runs in Game 1 of the 2012 World Series. It was just an incredible night. And it felt like the temperature in the arena went up 11 degrees. So that's a memorable one for me. And another one involving Clay, his Game 6 explosion in the Western Finals against the Oklahoma City Thunder when they were down 3-1. And he came back in Game 6 in OKC, and I think it was 41 he ended up putting up. And that's one of the monster clutch performances ever. So those are a few of mine, and I'll hand it over to you. And I know there are probably bigger moments than that, but those are kind of building block moments that led up to some spectacular memories.
Yeah, well, you had mentioned another one in one of your Facebook posts about, of course, the game against the Rockets, where the Rockets just could not hit a three. I mean, just all of a sudden, they missed 27 in a row in Game 7 when it matters. I mean, that's definitely near the top of the list. But, you know, for me, as far as, now this isn't just one game, but I would consider it a moment, the 24-game winning streak to start the season in 2015-16, because that was something else, that you just couldn't miss a game. You know, you knew that every night it was going to be, can they keep the streak going? You know, especially once it got past, let's say, 15 or 16 wins, then you're just like, okay, I just want them to keep going. I mean, this is great. And there was a double overtime game in there against the Celtics that actually was the last win before the Bucks beat them on the road. And you figured maybe they would lose on that road trip, because remember, that was a long road trip. And at some point, they're going to lose a game there. But they won that game in Boston. I mean, that was really exciting regular season stuff.
And that Boston game was an absolute grind. And that was one of those games where you're thinking, man, they're having to work hard to win. It's going to take something out of them. And it did. And I think, you know, this law of averages caught up with them as well. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk over the years, well, they went all out to get that win streak and that 73-9 record that cost them in the finals. I don't subscribe to that. I think maybe there was some mental fatigue, as there always is when you're trying to keep playing at that high level. But there were other factors that led to them losing the finals of 2016 that they've been gone over time and time again, such as Draymond getting suspended. So, you know, I still look at that as one of the most remarkable stretches of basketball I've ever seen. I mean, my goodness. I mean, the record plays it out, but just the way they played as well. And that's when that arena was the place to be. And, you know, you don't get a whole lot of moments like that in the NBA, you know, whether it's the Celtics versus the Lakers, whether it's Showtime, whether it's Michael Jordan, where your arena is the place to be on the planet for if you're a Hoops fan. And that's what it was like for those couple of years, but especially the 73-9 season. And I heard some people talking about how the season would be a failure if they didn't win the championship. And I didn't really see it that way, but I threw it out on Twitter anyway. You guys think this is a failure? You know, I wanted to hear what people really thought about it. And it was 50-50. Even Dave Fleming chimed in. I remember that on Twitter. He said, no, absolutely not. It's not a failure. And I would agree with him on that. It was still a memorable season. It just didn't end up the way you wanted to. And, you know, 20 years from now, that's what we're going to remember, just the high level of basketball they played, even if it didn't end up in a championship.
Yeah. I don't think you always have to win the championship to have success. I mean, I would never call that a failure. In fact, one of my moments on the list is last year, Game 6 at Oracle, the last game at Oracle. The Warriors lose to the Raptors, but that was a wildly entertaining game. The place was roaring. Klay Thompson, after he got hurt, when he came back to shoot the free throws. I mean, these are moments that you're never going to forget, even though the team lost. I mean, they were fighting so hard without Kevin Durant and without Klay Thompson, as it turned out there at the end. I mean, the drama is something that you're looking for as far as great moments and sports. That's what we're looking for, I think. You can't say that was a failure.
Oh, no, and I don't think fans were at that point. I think many fans were just, like, you know, appreciative of the effort to just get that point. You suffered two absolutely devastating injuries. I mean, the fates of that franchise turned on a dime within the space of a couple of days, and they darn near won that game anyway without Klay. I believe they would have won it had Klay been in there, because he was playing the game of his life.
Oh, yeah.
He really was. He was playing incredible basketball that night. It wasn't just about scoring 37 in the quarter. He was doing it at both ends of the floor and hitting big shots. And, you know, he was kind of going toe-to-toe with Kawhi in that regard. And I think, you know, they would have forced a Game 7. And who knows, in a Game 7, you know, the Raptors would have been favored. But had Klay not gotten hurt, I think the Warriors had a chance to win that championship. I definitely had a chance to win that game. And they still almost pulled it out. And there's something I'll always remember, that, you know, they take Klay to the hospital to get his exam. He comes out of the exam, he can't listen to the game, and it's got to be killing him. And he comes out and says, did we win? And, you know, I mean, what a letdown that must have been. But and to find out that you're not going to be playing basketball for close to a year, most likely. Wow, yeah, that was really something else. That's a game I have good memories of, though, even despite the injury, but just the effort that it took to get to that point. I'm going to throw you. You mentioned a moment with Steph in a regular season game at the Garden. I'm going to go to the best regular season game of the decade, I thought. That was the one in Oklahoma City, where Steph makes the half court three.
And yeah. Mike
Green
goes,
my gosh. Bang! Bang!
Yes. That was great.
There was a lot going on in that game, on and off the court. You know, that was some high drama. And you come back and win that game. It was just tremendous. They've had some great moments in that building where, you know, again, it was an arch rival, and they took them down. And they took down the Rockets, you know, time and time again. But that game was so much fun that I don't know who was doing a post-game show that night, but I called him up afterwards. I think it was Ryan Covey, and I called him up. It was a Saturday night. And I think I was a couple of glasses of wine in, but I still had to get on the air to rave about that game. So that's preserved for eternity. Who knows how many swear words I threw out there, but that's one of those that, you know, you just got so fired up about basketball. And that doesn't happen a lot in a regular season game.
No, that was so awesome. That shot just sticks in my mind, too, from Steph. All right, to finish up, as we go into the new year, I have to say, I mean, it is going to be really intriguing to see what the Warriors do. Bob Myers, there's a really good story actually written by Ann Killian in the San Francisco Chronicle that I encourage everybody to read about Bob Myers and about, you know, what was going on beforehand, you know, getting Kevin Durant and everything and losing him and the emotions of that and what's happening with the Warriors now. He's got his work cut out for him. No doubt he's got some very key decisions to make, and it's definitely going to be interesting to watch here in the coming months.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be a few months that's going to influence the direction of this franchise for the next 3 or 4 years. You know, how they handle D'Angelo Russell, how they handle other players they might end up trading, how they handle the draft, what they do in the offseason this coming summer. But make no mistake about it, the Warriors are going to be a serious contender next year if they're healthy. When all the pieces, no matter what kind of pieces we're talking about, because you're going to have Steph, you're going to have Klay, you're going to have Draymond. You know, they're locked up long term. And you know, this first year at the arena didn't start out the way they wanted to, but They're starting to play better at home, and you know they need to create an atmosphere. Well, you get those guys back, and the atmosphere will be there just because the level of basketball is going to be so good again. But you know, it's about what other pieces, you know, given your contractual restraints, are you going to make to turn this into a, you know, not only just a contender but a deadly serious contender, which I think their intention is. I got a lot of trust in these guys. They've you know, pulled some magic tricks involving the salary cap over the last few years. So that's the game, really, within the game to watch with this team, even more so than what happens on the court.
All right, well, looking forward to that, and Happy New Year, Ray. Can't wait to see what happens here in the next week, if the Warriors keep this winning streak going. But it certainly is it's great to be talking about a team that's won three in a row for once this year. First time they're doing that, and it was just, like we said, so entertaining to have Christmas and be able to watch a game like that.
Yeah, it was a little gift for fans who are going to suffer a little bit this year. And, you know, I mean, there's just been so much good basketball in the last 5 years. I think everybody's kind of philosophical about it, and maybe, in a way, welcoming a bit of an off year to take the pressure off and just think about hoops and coach players up and play better basketball. That's the main thing. Play better basketball, and we're starting to see that.
All right, Ray, Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, same to you, Joe, and same to everyone out there.
Thanks for listening to the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Join Joe Castellano and Ray Woodson again next week on thesportsvirus.com.